Hey everyone, welcome to Talk That Talk podcast. I'm your host Brittany, and I'm so glad you're here. Everyone has a story, and everyone's story matters. Join me as I invite my guests on the show to share their stories in order to bring you hope, encouragement, and inspiration, as well as talk on the real about the things in life that truly matter. My hope is that you listen and leave feeling encouraged and that you would know that your story matters. Hey friends, you are listening to episode 11 today, and we are back with part 2 of our first series on mental health. My friend Hannah Jones is joining us again to talk about helpful tips that we have found in dealing with depression and anxiety. So our hope in this is that if you're someone who is dealing with depression and anxiety, or if you know someone who's dealing with that, that you would be able to use these tips, that they would be helpful to you. I'm excited to be back with her. I really hope that you guys find something to be encouraging from this and helpful, and that you can use some of these tools that we found in your daily life, or encourage someone else to use them. We do talk about some pretty hard stuff during this episode, so just to warn you there, we do talk about suicide, and we do talk about the struggles of deep depression and anxiety. So just wanted to give you a fair warning on that, but I hope that you like our conversation. Here it is. Hey, Han.
Hey, Britt.
I'm excited to have you back this week.
I'm so excited to be back again. I guess I must have done somewhat of a good job to make it back another week.
You did. You did a great job. So for those of you who haven't listened to the last episode, my friend Hannah here is going to be with us for our first series on mental health, and this is part 2. So if you haven't listened to part 1, go back and listen to that. But this week, for part 2 of the series, we are talking about some helpful tips that we have found. Again, we are not professionals. We are not therapists. We are not counselors. But in our experience with depression and anxiety, we have found the following tips to just be helpful for us when coping with it, when trying to identify when we're in a rough season. And we want to share those with you. If you are someone who is dealing with these things, or if you have a friend or a loved one who's dealing with these things, we hope that they will equip you to just care for one another better and to care for yourself better in the midst of depression or anxiety. So we're just going to jump right in. So we've come up with 7 things that we found to be really helpful for us. And we're just going to go through those one by one and unpack them a little bit. So number one, we talked about how it's been really helpful for us if we have the opportunity to break up our day in sections, especially when I'm feeling depressed. Just getting out of bed sometimes feels like a lot of work. And I think, Hannah, you said this in the last episode, that sometimes when your feet hit the floor, you're like, all right, all I have to do is make it to bed tonight.
Yeah.
So that's a really good indicator, I think, of how this can be helpful. If you have the ability to break up your day in chunks and give yourself maybe like an hour break in between things, or even a 2-hour break in between things, just to decompress, give yourself a breather. If there's a way you can make that work in your schedule, that has really been helpful for me, because when I feel like I'm going from one thing to the next and I never have a chance to breathe, sometimes it just feels really, really life draining and makes me kind of withdraw even more. So if that's something you're able to do, I found that to be helpful. Hannah, is that something you found to be helpful in your walk?
Yeah, I definitely have utilized breaking up my day a lot. I think I do it a slightly different than the way you describe, and it'll look different for everybody just based on your job, if you're a student, where you live, and obviously if you have kids, this is a totally different conversation for sure. But I mean, you could do it as simple as breaking it up into your meal times. So if you just only think about the things that you need to accomplish between when you wake up and when you have breakfast, depending on, I mean, that might only be a 15-minute time period, but it's still thinking about it in small chunks. Mm-hmm. Because I think I come at this tip more from an anxiety perspective. And for me, thinking of my whole day is very overwhelming, and I can get really anxious really easily. But even if I just break it up into before lunch, in between lunch and dinner, and then between dinner and bedtime, it's a lot easier to just accomplish what I need to accomplish in that 3 to 4 hour time period, and that's all I really have to worry about.
Yeah.
And if it's something that I really love, having an agenda or a planner and marking it up with different colors, something that actually brings me a lot of joy. And so if that's something that's in your joy life, then definitely take advantage of maybe block scheduling your day as well.
That's a good point. See, I'm glad, this is why we need both of us here, because I would have never even thought about it that way. So that's really cool. So take it away with number two.
Yeah. So number two, we thought that both of us, and again, from a pretty different standpoint, have both seen that taking care of yourself is a really helpful thing that we have used in seasons where we're really struggling, in addition to seasons that might be a little bit easier, but we're just kind of in that maintenance routine of trying to stay above ground or above the water.
Yeah.
And again, similarly to the last one, this looks really different. And I think Britt and I sometimes can kind of joke about it, because the way we take care of ourselves is really different. And that seems like a very daunting task and a very big, like, oh, take care of yourself. Like, eat your fruits and vegetables, drink 100 ounces of water a day or whatever the amount is. But for me, I have always kind of taken the approach of doing something for myself once a week, once a month, once every other week, just some kind of regular schedule so that I can make sure that I'm taking time away from the craziness of life to just really take a moment for myself. And for me, that's getting my nails done. It's a very simple thing, and I love it, and my nails look great. I think my nails love it. But it is funny, because I can remember one time in college, Britt, I think you said to me, you can always tell when there's something going on with Hannah if her nails are not done.
Aww.
So, that's something that I really protect in my life, is that time where I can take a step away and kind of, I mean, when you're getting your nails done, it is plenty of time to reflect. So even choosing an activity like that, that gives you some quiet or something that is different than the normal routine of your life, just to break up the monotony of walking around every day if your schedule's the same every day.
Yeah, that's really good. Your nails always do look great too.
I was blessed with great nail beds.
Yeah, you really were. I don't have great ones. So for me, yeah, it looks a little different. And I also want to say too that these are tips that I don't always follow, that we don't always follow. Like Hannah said, if her nails aren't done, that means something's going on. So it's not like, I mean, we're not perfect at doing these things. These are just things that we know are helpful. And when we have the strength to do them, we do them. So for me, definitely exercising and eating well are really helpful. They just help my brain. I think there's a lot of research behind that, how those things can help fight depression and keep you happier. But I mean, if I'm feeling really depressed, there's no way I'm going to the gym. So I don't say this to be like, if you're not going to the gym, then you're not taking care of yourself and you're doing a terrible job at managing your depression. So don't hear me say that at all. But when I'm kind of in that maintenance stage, or when I'm coming out of a hard season, I try to make that a priority to get in the gym, to eat healthy, to just take care of my body, because I think that will help. I mean, that just helps my brain. That helps me take care of the rest of myself. Also, just things like sleeping in, or going to see a movie, or reading a book, or going to a coffee shop and, you know, just reading a book by yourself. I always find that to be relaxing. Whatever excites you or makes you feel like, oh, that would be so relaxing. Taking a bath, going on a hike, whatever those things look like. Sometimes it's cleaning my room. That is really therapeutic for me. I love cleaning my room and like lighting some candles and putting on some music and just relaxing in my room. I feel way better when I'm organized, kind of like your planner that's funny. Like, for me, it's cleaning my room. So this can look a lot of different ways. So whatever, like I said, whatever you feel like makes you feel relaxed, going to a spa, whatever it is, do it if you feel like you can. But I think with that, we talked about taking care of yourself, the fine line between taking care of yourself and hiding. I don't know if this is something that you do, Han, but this is something I do.
Yeah.
I can easily make the excuse like, oh, I'm really not feeling well. I need to rest. I need to just get some sleep. I need to be by myself, whatever. I can very easily turn that into hiding and not wanting to make any contact with other people, not wanting to come out of my room, not wanting to do anything. And when I hide, that makes it a lot worse. That makes my depression a lot worse.
I definitely think that I've experienced a little bit of that too. And I think it's really important in things like eating well or going to the gym. If that's totally your jam, then set yourself up well in bringing a bag of clothes with you to work so yeah. that you don't have to come home and take the risk that you'll come home and not go back out. So right. set yourself up well in that you're almost not letting yourself go into that withdrawal or hiding mode.
Right.
Because you've structured your life or the things around you to enable you to succeed.
Yeah. And that leads me well into the number three, which is community. So another strategy I use in times that I'm really struggling is to tell people like, hey, I'm really struggling. And this is what I do when I struggle. So I think we don't have this listed, but I think it's good for individuals to kind of like just be self-aware of your symptoms, I guess. So like, I can tell that I'm really struggling with depression when I'm not working out, when I'm not eating well, when I'm hiding, and, you know, when I can't get out of bed. Like, those are signs for me that something's off. And for Hannah, I don't know what those signs are for you. Do you have any that come to mind other than your nails?
That makes me sound like...
No, well, sorry. I don't mean this to sound like that.
I'm kidding. No, my nails actually aren't done right now, but...
Are you okay?
Yeah, I'm great.
Okay.
I think some of the things, I definitely think one of the most noticeable things for me that often changes the quickest is my sleep.
Yeah.
If I'm not sleeping through the night, episode, if I'm waking up in the middle of the night sweating, if I am sleeping, I'm not a huge sleeper. I usually wake up pretty early in the morning. But for me, if I'm sleeping until like noon, those are kind of the first red flags for me when I can tell that there's something going on in my head that I need to pay attention to. Or the other big one is my eating. Because
is your what?
My eating.
Mm-hmm.
Because I am a big binge eater.
Me too. Me too.
Always been the thing that I've struggled with.
Yep.
Whenever I feel anxious, beeline to the fridge, man.
Dude, we could do a whole other podcast on our relationship with food. I will talk about that at some point on this podcast because I really struggle with that too. And that is another, both sleep and food are definitely symptoms for me too, or signs that something's not right. I definitely go to food for comfort at times.
Yeah.
Or just mind-numbing things like watching TV or playing a game on my phone. Like if I'm on that for hours and hours, that I'm hiding because I don't want to think about what's happening. So.
Yeah.
So anyway, I think that's a really good thing for everyone to do, and just to be aware, and so that your friends and family can be aware too of like, hey, have you been to the gym lately? You haven't been in the gym in 2 months? You know, okay, that's a red flag, you know? So anyway, community is a big one. I think if I didn't have people in my life that knew when things were off and knew how to love me, it would be so hard. But find those people that you can trust that aren't going to judge you, that aren't going to, you know, dismiss your pain, that maybe have been through similar experiences and can really relate to what you're going through, but mostly just people that genuinely care about you and are going to listen to what you're going through. And I have my people that I definitely, I mean, Hannah, you're one of those people that I will tell, hey, I'm really struggling right now. Can you be praying for me? You know, my mom, my dad, there's other friends of mine that I just let them know, hey, I'm feeling this way. Can you guys be praying for me? And they do. And people come alongside me and they ask me those questions and they help me. And I don't know what I would do without that. That's been so helpful for me. What about you, Han?
Yeah, I definitely, I think probably most similar to you in this is there are a lot of people in my life who I know that I can turn to, and you're definitely one of those people. And I can remember conversations between the two of us. There's one that, for whatever reason, I can very vividly remember sitting outside Saints Cafe with you and you asking me how I was doing with depression. I think it might have been right coming back to school after summer break or something. There was some transition, because transition is one of the, it's not a red flag for me necessarily, but it's a risk factor, I guess you could say it that way.
Yeah.
Is times of transition for me are most likely when I'm going to struggle. And so having you and you knowing that about me has really helped me. And like just having you, especially you, hold me accountable to that. And I think especially if this is something that you are just figuring out for the first time, you don't have to I mean, we're saying people as in plural, but you don't have to have an army of people that you tell on a regular basis how you're doing or that are checking up on you. If it's just one person that you trust and trust a lot and they're going to hold you accountable, then it only has to be one person.
Totally.
It's definitely not something that you're not super comfortable sharing with everybody that you're close with. You don't have to. It's yours to tell. You have the freedom to tell who you want to tell, but definitely making sure that if you do want to tell somebody, that it's somebody who will hold you accountable and check up on you and support you through it, because the last thing you want is to put yourself in a vulnerable position and then just be ignored or not be seen.
Totally.
Through that.
I mean, yeah, don't go through this alone. Like, that's the last thing that, you know, we want for you. And I also want to say here too that if you are someone who has a friend or someone that you love is dealing with anxiety or depression, I think sometimes that's a really hard subject to approach for people who haven't experienced it and for people who don't know much about it. But I just want to encourage you, like, just come out and ask the question. Like, if you are worried about your friend, just come out and ask them, are you okay? What's going on? Are you struggling with depression? Are you feeling anxious? What are you feeling anxious about? You know, how long has this been going on? Like, you don't have to talk in code. Like, just come out and ask the question. And along with that, if you are noticing really different behavior in someone, I would encourage you to ask the hard question. Are you having thoughts of suicide? You know, if your friend is coming to you and saying, I'm really depressed, I'm really struggling, like, just don't be afraid to ask that question outright, because it's not something that you want to skirt over. I don't know. I've had people ask me that, and there's been times where I said, yeah, you know, like, and for someone to know that is really, really important. Like, if you are having thoughts of suicide, it's nothing to be ashamed of. It's nothing to be, you know, you're not less than because you are having those thoughts. I would really encourage you, if you're someone out there who is having those thoughts, to find someone that you trust, either a counselor or a friend or family member that you can say that to. Because once someone knows, then you're so much more, you're not alone in it. And that's the last thing you want to be, is alone in something like that. So I know that just got heavy, but I just feel like that's really important. That's something that they teach us as volunteers in Young Life. If we have a relationship with a student that is, you know, really depressed, like, they encourage us to ask that question, because you just never want to look back and be like, oh, I wish I would have asked, you know, if something were to happen.
Yeah. And I think the biggest fear is that you're going to, by asking that question, you're going to put that idea into somebody's head.
Yeah.
But, I mean, all the research shows that if they're not thinking about it, you asking that question isn't going to make them start thinking about it.
Yeah.
So don't be afraid of that. And if they do share that with you, do something about it. Don't just sit on that information. And even if you think that they're just being dramatic, or if they're in a mode where they'll snap out of it or whatever, you have to really have to take those things seriously and take steps to help them have access to resources.
Totally. Yeah. Assume that they're telling you the truth, you know, assume that they're not exaggerating. So
exactly.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah. You ready for number four?
Yeah, let's do it.
So this has been something that I have really enjoyed. There are times where it actually makes me laugh. and it's probably more of an exercise that I would say has helped me most with my anxiety as opposed to my depression. But yeah. I'm sure there are a lot of ways that you could apply something like this or something similar to help more with depression than anxiety. But for this case, for me and my anxiety, I actually got this idea from the show This Is Us. And in the show, which is a great show.
It's the best show ever.
Randall and Beth had just, I think Deja, the girl that they adopted, had just had some incident, maybe with her mom or something, where Beth and Randall were really stressed out and they were really feeling anxious about the situation with Deja. I cannot remember for the life of me what the situation was. But there's a scene where they're standing outside of Deja's room after they had been in there talking to her, and they just look at each other and they say, worst case scenario, and then they start firing back and forth all of their thoughts of what's the worst thing that can possibly happen in this situation.
Yeah.
And they do it with each other kind of back and forth. And that's something that I have found really helpful, especially my mind just so often goes to worst case scenario thoughts, especially when I feel really anxious about something. And for me, a lot of times I will just rattle off my worst case scenario thoughts, especially with my fiance, Josh. And most of the time it's just me sharing with him because we're not really anxious or stressed about the same thing. But I trust him, obviously, because I'm marrying him.
Yeah.
But he's somebody that I know that I can trust, and I know that he will just listen to me and not laugh or not say, you're crazy for thinking that. Like, that's just not even possible. Like, how would that even happen? Because they're not rational thoughts.
Totally.
And so just getting those worst case scenario thoughts out into the open and speaking them into existence really, from my experience, has lessened their grip on me, and I don't feel suffocated by them. They just lose their control because I'm able to process them, get them out into the open. And then if I'm in a good place, I do have the opportunity to talk to Josh about why some of those thoughts might not be super realistic.
Yeah.
And that doesn't always happen. Sometimes it just is me word vomiting everything, and then that's it. And I usually just get this big, like, weight off your shoulder, and then come back and address it later or whatever. But just having that release into reality, into existence, has really helped me clear my head and just lessen the grip of my anxiety over me completely.
Yeah, that's awesome. I think that's so true with so many things. Like, if we have a secret, or if we're ashamed of something and we feel like we can't tell anyone, or, like, for me, when I'm really depressed, I get those just really negative self-talk thoughts, and even just saying those things out loud takes the power away, whether it's, yeah, like, to someone else, or just saying it out loud to yourself or the Lord. Speaking things, bringing things into the light, like we said, it just takes away their power over us. So that's really good.
There are many times where it won't even be a super crazy thought. There are plenty of times where I'll have this thought where the world is literally going to end. Like that is something that crosses my mind. But then there are other times where I will say something and worst case scenario is
like realistic.
Yeah. And even that, it gives me perspective of, okay, what is actually the worst thing that's going to happen in this situation? Because most of the time it's not that bad.
Yeah.
And when you can process that and get that out in kind of in front of you and just have that perspective of, hey, worst case scenario, I'm so anxious about this test. Worst case scenario, I don't do well on it. I can make up, I can compensate in my other assignment. I can study differently for my next exam, but worst case scenario, I fail this exam. I'm not going to die. I'm not sick. The world is not going to end. I fail an exam and it's going to be okay. And so it really helps to just gain a better perspective of just kind of what's running wild in your head.
Yeah, it's good stuff. All right, we ready for number 5?
Yeah, give it to me.
So number 5 is medication. Me and Hannah have both been on medication or are still currently on it. I'm currently on 2 medications for depression, and we talked a little bit about that in part 1. But I really wanted to talk about this because I remember when I was first kind of dealing with my depression, I thought that if I went on medication, that one, that meant that I wasn't trusting God enough to like cure me of this or heal me or help me deal with it. And that like I didn't have enough faith or something like that if I went on medication. And two, that it would just really negatively impact me and there would be tons of side effects and I would be worse off for that. This definitely is an individual case by case basis. So I'm not saying like if you feel depressed, you should be on medication. But I just want to debunk the lie that like if you go on medication for something dealing with your mental health, that means that it's a crutch or you don't have enough faith in God. The Lord is the one who created human beings, who had the capacity to create these medications in order to help us. I mean, he knows what we need and he's the healer of all. And I firmly believe that God has given me my medication to help me because it has. It has really helped me in the last year and I'm so thankful for it. Do I love the idea of being on medication? No, I mean, I don't. I hope that I'm not on it for the rest of my life, but if I have to be, then I'm okay with that because I would rather be on medication and be more healthy in my mind than not be on it and be struggling mentally. And again, this is such an individual thing. Like if you don't need medication, then don't be on it. And if you feel like you're in a good place and you can get off your medication like you did, Hannah, then do that. I mean, you got to do what's best for you and you got to talk to your doctor and your counselor. But I mainly just wanted to bring that up because it has really helped me. And I just want people to know that it's not a crutch. I mean, you would not call, I don't know, blood pressure medication a crutch for someone who's dealing with that. You just wouldn't. And it's the same with this. So that's kind of my tangent on medicine. Do you have anything to add on that?
Not really. I mean, everything when I was thinking about going on medication, everything that you said definitely resonates with how I felt at that time. Yeah, I mean, I think you said it beautifully. I don't think it's something to be ashamed of if you need it.
Right.
And it's definitely a conversation that you can open up with your doctor, but it's not a cure-all.
Totally.
It's not always easy because there are times where you might get put on a medication, it's the wrong dose, it's the wrong medication, and so it does take some time. It does take some effort and energy to figure out what the best medication, what the best dose is for you. So it's not, it's definitely not something that you're gonna just breeze through.
Yeah, it's not an overnight fix.
Exactly. But if it's something that you need, then you need it and you need to get it because it will help you, but it does, it's not always the easiest experience.
Totally. And it's not a cure-all. Like, I mean, I still go through hard times and I still definitely get depressed, even though I'm on medicine. But it has helped. And that's a good point to make, too, that it's not, it's not overnight. Like, I started on just Lexapro and it made me so tired. Like, I felt like I was drugged all the time because I was so tired. And then they put me on the Wellbutrin, which helped with my energy. And so, like, luckily it didn't take super long for me to find out the best mix and the right dosages and all that stuff, but it could take a while. So something you need to be patient with, but if it's for you, awesome. If it's not, that's totally awesome too. So number six, right?
Yeah, I think, yeah.
Six.
Six. Okay. So number six, we found, both of us, I think, that counseling was something that we both sought out and found very helpful. I'm seeing a counselor right now. Britt, are you still seeing somebody?
No, I'm not. Mainly because of money.
Yeah. Yeah, so I have been going to counseling for a really long time, and I've been going off and on, and most recently I actually started counseling about a month ago, so it's kind of a new transition for me back into counseling. But this has just been a space for me that I can just bring whatever, and I don't have to worry about any judgment or fear or just any backlash. I think especially for me and my situation, there are very few people in my life that can really operate from a third party perspective.
Yeah.
And in a lot of situations, especially with my family, I really do need that perspective. And it does, I love my friends, I love them dearly, but it does really help to have the perspective of somebody who doesn't know my parents, who doesn't know my sisters, who sometimes doesn't even know Josh.
Yeah.
And that perspective has just been really helpful for me, because I'm not worried about what I'm going to say or how it's going to affect my relationship with said person or that person, and because I can come in and just bring whatever I want to talk about. I get to lead the discussion. I have generally overall a goal of my therapy sessions, but there'll be weeks where something happened that week and I just need to address it right now. And
yeah,
then we'll get back to the overall goal of my therapy. But again, I think this is really similar in a lot of ways to medication, is that it's not a one size fits all either. If I'm being totally honest, I think I've probably had close to seven different counselors.
Mm-hmm.
And there were times where I went through those counselors very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
I think there was a period of time where I had three counselors in a year because I just wasn't vibing with any of them.
Yeah.
And I didn't really like their style. I think a lot of my counselors were actually older, like older than my parents even. And I very quickly learned that I did not like that. And eventually I've pretty much had two main counselors. I had a counselor when I was in high school, and then I have my counselor now who I absolutely adore. And they've been very different experiences just based on what I was looking for at the time. I think I know my counselor in high school, she was Jewish, and I was trying to figure out some faith things, but for whatever reason, it worked. We worked really well together, and she was super respectful of what I was dealing with and navigating my faith and my relationships with my parents. And she was awesome and I love her, but when I came back a month ago and needed to go see another counselor again, she only does adolescent counseling. And so then I had kind of think about what I was looking for in a counselor this time around. And now I'm seeing somebody who is a pastoral counselor. So she does have a lot of faith-based things built into her practice, and that served me really well over the last month and a half, month or two. Just in the things that I'm struggling with and working through now, it's just been really great. And so don't be afraid if the first counselor you try is not the best for you. If you don't like them, you don't, there's no obligation. You don't have to stay there. You can switch at any point. It's really awkward to tell them you're not coming back, but you just
but have they'll get to over it.
Because it'll serve you the best in the long run just to say, hey, I think I'm done.
Yeah.
I don't know. I actually think most of the time I was able to avoid those conversations by, like, moving or leaving for college and all the things. But, yeah, so just don't be discouraged if the first or the second or the third counselor is not the best fit for you. Just keep trying. And there are options. There are, if money is a factor for you, there are options. If you have insurance, some insurance will cover counseling for you. There are also counselors out there that work on a sliding scale where they'll work with you to figure out a price that you can both agree on. Just depends on a number of factors based on your income or your student status or whatever. I'm not exactly sure what all the factors that go into it are, but just know that if counseling is something that you want to try, there are people out there who are willing to help you make that happen, even if it's going to your church. A lot of churches have counseling programs.
Yeah, counseling was huge for me. I think I went to therapy as a kid, but kind of the same thing. I didn't really vibe with anyone and didn't get much out of it at all. I started going to counseling like July of 2017, and completely changed me. I mean, the Lord definitely led me to my counselor, and I saw someone who has their own practice but is connected to a church. She's a Christian counselor, and so definitely is rooted in you know, the Christian faith and has a lot of biblical advice, and that was huge for me. I had just a lot of lies about God that I was believing and about me that I was believing, and to be able to go to her and just like bare my soul and say things out loud that I would never want to say and just completely show someone all your ugliness without fear of judgment or without fear of rejection just was a total game changer for me. And she helped me so much with my identity and how I see myself and how I see God, and she just assured me so much of like, you're not crazy. This is, like I said last time, I think that, you know, this is not something that you brought on yourself. You're not a bad person. I mean, of course I'm a sinful person, but like the Lord loves you and this is who you really are. You're not that. This doesn't make you who you are. I don't know. It was just a game changer for me. I could rave about it for hours. And I think even if you feel like you're the healthiest person in the world, you should go see a counselor, because I'm sure there's something that you could talk about and that they could help you figure out and sort through. And she challenged me, but she was just so full of grace. And I love her so much. And she's definitely one of my heroes. I definitely knew, like, I saw her for a year and I was like, okay, I think I'm okay. I think, you know, I can stop for a while, but it's awesome. I recommend it to everyone. I think wherever you are in life, you could use counseling. And we all, because we all have unhealthy tendencies and thought patterns that shape our identities, our outlook on life, our relationships. And it's so incredible to be able to just be real with someone, like a third party who has no, you know, stake in your life, really, that can just help you see the truth through all the mess that you may be in.
Yeah, and it's actually funny because this is not, I don't know if funny is the right word, but there are actually a lot of counseling programs for students who want to be counselors, and a lot of those programs actually require them to be in counseling while they're learning how to be a counselor. So it's really, if it's for people who are trying to be counselors, it can be for anybody.
Totally. Yeah. Man, I could talk about that for days. Yeah. It totally changed everything for me. Cool. So our last one, number 7, is, I guess I'll just say time with the Lord. That can look however you want it to, but specifically scripture. I'd want to say before we get into this that again, if you are a Christian and you're going through a time of anxiety or depression or just a lot of pain circumstantially or whatever it may be, and you don't have a quiet time one day, or you don't read your Bible one day, or even 2 days, or even a week, God loves you, and that doesn't disqualify you from coming to Him and opening His Word and being with Him. Like, Jesus is the one who qualifies you for that. So there were definitely days where I couldn't even look at my Bible because I was just like, I don't want to see in there that I am failing or that I'm so messed up, or, and you know, I don't want to see that in there. And not that I would, but I guess that was my fear. And there are a lot of times where I felt completely cut off from God. Like I just could not feel His presence. I could not hear Him speaking to me. And so for me, scripture just looked like I had one verse that I really just clung to, which is John 1:5. Everyone who knows me knows that's my favorite verse. And it just talks about how Jesus is light and the light shines in the darkness and the darkness has not overcome it. And for me, it was all the darkness that I felt like was going on in myself, in my brain, whatever, was not more powerful than the light of God. Even though I couldn't feel that all the time and I couldn't see it all the time, I knew it was there. And that was just something I really soaked in, was just that verse. And also reading accounts in the Bible of people who went through tremendous suffering, suffering way worse than mine. Jesus is suffering too, really helped me just to see the honesty and the realness of people that God loved and that God used for great things that went through really, really hard times and were depressed. And another thing that I found to be really helpful was reading books, not necessarily the Bible, but reading books about people struggling with depression. One of my favorite books ever is Spurgeon's Sorrows, and it's all about Charles Spurgeon, who is a famous Christian pastor in London, and he suffered from really, really bad depression, among other things, and it's taken from bits and pieces of his sermons or his books and just gives really great advice and was super comforting for me when I was in the pit. So that's scripture from my end. I mean, and there would be times where I would try to pray and I just couldn't because I didn't feel like God was there. But however it looks like for you, it's okay. But I know that the Lord is the one who got me through that. And He's the one who gave me all these other tips, you know, like it all comes from Him. He's the entire dresser, not just a drawer in the dresser. And I can look back and see now how He was so faithful in that. So what about you, Han?
Yeah, I also, just when I'm in the pits, have a really hard time spending time with the Lord. It's just, it's something that I struggle with kind of on a daily basis, even when I'm not in the pits. So yeah. When I am not feeling great, it's probably one of the first things to go for me.
Mm-hmm.
And you could probably go into a number of reasons of why that probably is. And yeah. A lot of it is, we touched in the first episode, of just feeling like I could not bring it to Him, or for whatever reason that He couldn't handle that for me. And I think someone said this to me a few weeks ago. My family had gone through a couple of pretty significant losses, and it was really interesting because it's so easy to, in things like forgiveness, to look at the ways that God forgives and mm-hmm. then just use that as a flow of forgiveness for you personally, and knowing that God forgave undeserving people and that you can somewhat resonate with Him, and that the goal for you is also to resonate to forgive undeserving people. But it's a lot easier to resonate that you and Jesus or God have this shared experience, but for some reason, for a lot of people, it's really hard to remember that you and Jesus also have a very shared experience of suffering.
Yes.
And so that's something that I think just really in the last month or two, I've kind of noticed and paid attention to, is that Jesus knows about suffering. He's probably the expert in suffering.
Yeah.
And there's no reason for me to think that He doesn't know what it feels like to go what I'm going to go through what I'm going through.
Yep.
But that's often very hard to remember when you're really struggling.
Yeah.
So I'm definitely not an expert on it.
Yeah.
And I think the Bible is a great place to look at examples of some of like the coolest and strongest Christians out there who really struggle with depression.
Yeah.
And who have a ton of experience of bringing that to the Lord's feet.
Yeah.
I mean, if you read through Psalms, or Britt, you talked about Job, or even just the Israelites being in the desert and the wilderness for 40 years. I mean, all of those experiences are full of just, I mean, sometimes you read it and it just screams depression from the page.
Yeah.
Or
anxiety. So, yeah.
Yeah. And those can be really comforting to know that some, like I said before, some of the coolest and strongest Christians who are in the Bible.
Yeah.
Experience some of the same things that I'm experiencing.
Yeah.
And so while the Bible can be really encouraging and can be really comforting, it can also be very isolating. I think a lot of times this may be a note for people who have other people in their life who really struggle with anxiety or depression, that if someone confides in you that they're struggling with anxiety or depression, just being aware of how you're responding to them. And I think one of those ways is maybe if you want to be really encouraging to them, first of all, I'm always a fan of asking what is most encouraging to
them. Yes.
And how you can best serve them in it. But also just being aware of the language that you use around it and sending verses like the Philippians 4 of just that say, do not be anxious about anything. Those kinds of verses may be more isolating than helpful.
Yeah.
And that's just something to maybe be aware of. For some people, it might be a great reminder. I know a lot of people who do struggle with anxiety and have actually memorized verses like that because it is really helpful for them. So that just goes back to asking people what's helpful for them, because sometimes verses that say, do not be anxious, are actually more isolating than helpful, because a lot of times we can't control when or why we feel anxious.
Yeah.
It just happens.
Yep. Yeah, I think that's really important to ask. I mean, and I think of Job and how his friends did not do that. And they just assumed, Job, all these bad things are happening to you because you did something wrong. You know, and they kind of twisted God's word into making Job, like, think it was his fault or pushing that on him. Does that make sense?
Yeah,
so
definitely.
I think we as people can twist the word of God into just, like, writing things off easily or... And we don't maybe intend to, but then it makes people feel like, oh, this is my fault, or God is against me because, you know, the Bible says, do not be anxious, but I'm anxious. So that must mean that God's upset with me, you know? But yeah, I think a lot of times in order to be a good friend, like you said, you ask what you need. And I know for me, when I'm feeling really depressed, I just want people to be around. Just check in, ask me how I'm doing, ask me to hang out, you know, just be there. And that's what I try to do now, is just be around, be near people. I mean, God says weep with those who weep and rejoice with those who rejoice, and we're called to carry one another's burdens. And I know who those people are because they've been in the thick of it with me in the past, and I know they'll be there in the future. But I love what you said about Jesus suffering with us. I think that's come to be one of the things I love most about Jesus, is that, like you said, he is the expert in suffering. He went through the separation of him and his father, and he had all of his friends betray him. And I mean, he freaking sweat blood the night before he died on the cross. So I would say that's anxiety. I don't know. Like, so stressed out that he was sweating blood. You know, like, that is crazy. And I love that about him. Before we end, do you have any other tips that came to mind while we were talking?
I think we touched most of the things that have been super helpful for me. I think just, again, circling back to what you said in the beginning of just, these are not things that we learned overnight. These are things that are still a work in progress, and they're really hard some days.
Yeah.
And just extending a lot of grace on yourself, towards yourself, is probably the biggest tip that I can give. And I cannot tell you how to do that, because that is something that I struggle with every day. So just being patient and being gracious and leaning on those who are closest to you, leaning on the Lord. None of it's a crutch. It's all it is a bunch of broken people trying to figure out how to live in a broken world. And some people, for whatever reason, seem like they can handle it better than others, but we all have our stuff, and there's nothing to be ashamed of in that.
Totally. And it's when we accept our weakness that we really find strength in the Lord.
Yeah.
And we find him to be near, I think, when we can finally accept that we can't do it on our own. So start there, maybe.
Yeah.
Well, thanks, Han. I think hopefully this is encouraging to you guys. And if you have any questions, feel free to reach out. And if you have any tips, feel free to reach out too, because we'd love for more people to know what tools are available to them.
And I want to know what tools work for you, because I'm trying to figure this out still.
Yeah, me too. Me too,
so
my
friend. So tell me what works.
Tell us how to not binge eat.
I'm actually sitting here eating chocolate now, so.
You went to the gym today, though, dog. That's okay.
I guess it's fine. The serving size is like 5 pieces, so I haven't had that yet, which makes me feel a little better.
Yeah. That should. All right, guys. Well, we will be back again next week. Hannah's going to share her story, and I'm so excited for that. And I think you guys will really be encouraged by what she has to say. And thanks for listening. Hannah, thanks for being with us again. And we will see you guys next time. Bye-bye. Hey, you guys, thank you so much for listening to today's episode. If you like what you hear, head on over to Apple Podcasts and leave me a rating and review. Don't forget to hit the subscribe button so you never have to miss the latest episode. If you want to learn more about the show or get in touch with me, you can head on over to talkthattalkpodcast.squarespace.com. Again, that's talkthattalkpodcast.squarespace.com. If you have any questions or if you want to share your story and be on the show, give me a shout. I would love to hear from you. Thank you guys so much again for listening and for all of your support. It means so much to me. And with that, we will be back next time. Hope you guys have a great rest of your day. Bye-bye.